Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
I used to be with it, but then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it, and what's it seems weird and scary to me. It'll happen to you.
If we ever, when we get really old and we've been successful in our pursuits and we need, a passion project at the end, we should do they should do this in Canada. I guess maybe they don't care as much. Maybe they wouldn't. But I would like to see, because it's funny, it's here in America, they've, plumbed the depths of every war when it comes to entertainment. You know what I mean? There's, a million World War II movies, tons of Revolutionary Civil War movies. I would like to see, I'd rather see it as a TV show, called The Other Colonies, about sort of the intrigue between the two, almost like a Game of Thronesian thing, you know? The intrigue between the Canadian colonies and the American colonies, that's, you know. And I presume almost never that there was ever any, actual conflict between the two sides, relatively speaking.
Which two sides?
Like the Canadian colonies and the American, it was sort of like the British and, I don't know, I'm just trying to wrap my head around it.
It was called the War of 1812, which, by the way, we won.
All right.
Which was a war between Britain and the Canadian colonists against some American colonists. The War of 1812, was a clusterfuck.
I thought that was Britain trying to reclaim America.
No, maybe that's what they teach you guys in school. You guys started it. It was your expansionist people that wanted to take the rest of the stuff you didn't already have. It was a defensive war for us. So a win for the United States in the War of 1812 would have been conquering the Canadian colonies.
Oh, the North.
A win.
Yeah.
A win for us in the War of 1812 is just keeping you crazy guys out of the colonies and stopping you at the border, which we managed to do. And then just for fun, we burned the White House. Which was cool. Although you did kick our ass at the Battle of New Orleans, so it all sort of evened out in the end. But it's interesting, Canadian history. You guys mythologized the Alamo, or the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Actually, you guys mythologize a lot of terrible defeats, but the Alamo in particular. So it's this great story of 100 or 150 plucky Americans and Texians holding off this super large force of Mexicans until they eventually get overrun. And Davy Crockett's there. And it's actually a pretty good story. I've been to the Alamo. And most Canadians, if you were to say to them, hey, do you know of Davy Crockett or the Alamo? I think they probably, in the back of their mind at least, would have gone, yeah, sure, we've heard of it. And many would know either through movies or books or whatever, because your mythology permeates our society. But the interesting thing is, here's something for you to do. Google, because I know you like to use the Google, the Battle of Long Sault, and Sault is spelled S-A-U-L-T. And so what that was a battle in 1660 during what was called the Beaver Wars, which is funny in and of itself, between some French settlers and the Iroquois, which was, if you had to pick a Native American, these guys are the top of the food chain when it comes to warriors, the Iroquois would have been right there. And so, here's kind of the breakdown of the numbers. The French militia had 17 guys, and they had 44 roughly Huron, which were allied Native American warriors. And the Iroquois had 700. So those are bad odds. And it turns out all the French were killed, and their Huron allies were killed. But they held the Iroquois off long enough so that while the Iroquois won a tactical victory, the French won a strategic victory because they prevented the Iroquois from continuing on and destroying Montreal and other settlements in the colony of Quebec. So, most Canadians, if you were to say to them the Battle of the Long Sault, they'd go, what? What are you talking about? And every Canadian should know about it because it is a great, great story. And I'm there's, as far as I know, there's never been a movie made about it, certainly not in English Canada. Maybe in French Canada there has, but I don't think so. And these are, in the U.S., you guys would have turned this into a television series 30 years ago. Like, this would have been a major motion picture starring Kevin Costner or something, and with a crummy French accent. But up here, it's we don't focus in on that stuff as much. And I don't want to glorify war, but it's part of our history, and it's a story of heroism on both sides that should be told. And, you know, there's plenty of those stories up here. I just wish more people would tell them.
So yeah.
It's great that you're interested
telling
in
you.
Canadian history.
The other colonies will win like a million Emmys, dude.
The other colonies. That's what we refer to you people as. The former colonies.
Exactly. Well, and from the point of view here, we'd be like, hey, there were other colonies. Like, it's like the other, there was other colonies, man. Did you know that? Because I really didn't. And I'm from, like, one of the original colonies, so, you know, you'd think I would know.
So
but
am I.
I barely know about this. I barely know about this War of 1812 you mentioned, which I'm sure there's history buffs in the audience being like, what an idiot. But it's like, it's talk about, that never gets any any coverage. No one ever talks about the War of 1812.
With the exception of Vietnam, you guys don't really talk about the wars that you lose or the ones that are kind of like ties. And Korea was kind of like a tie, and the War of 1812 was basically a tie. And I would say strategic loss because you didn't achieve your aims of taking over British North America. So I actually put that one in your loss column. But they're not sexy when you lose. You prefer the wars that you actually win, with the exception of Vietnam, which, you know, ruined your psyche for 30, 40 years. So the conversation never really – but, you know, up here, we don't really talk about our wars much at all, with the exception of when an anniversary comes around. So when the 200th anniversary of the War of 1812 came around, we commemorated it and put some stuff up and put
you
some
bastards.
Into it. And I know.
Did you celebrate burning our White House?
Well, and I do that every day. In fact, the British general who was in charge, you'll find this interesting or maybe not, the British general who was in charge of burning the White House is buried in Halifax. He's in the old burial ground downtown. And he was killed in Baltimore, which is kind of fitting, given Baltimore's reputation as a crime-ridden city of gun violence. But he was killed. The British continued on after Washington and moved down to attack Baltimore, and he was killed there. So, he's buried in Halifax. We treat him as a national hero because he held off the Yankees and then burned their White House. So, yay.
But on a more positive note, I believe your Christmas tree has arrived here. Yes, it has.
Oh, yeah.
It says Boston's Christmas tree from Nova Scotia. That was like 10 days ago, a week ago, to arrive Tuesday. So
that's true.
People who think that it's all conflict between Canada and America are sadly mistaken.
Well, the true story about the Christmas tree, so here's what happened. And it's a wonderful story of unity between really – siblings. We're siblings, Canada and the U.S. So in 1917...
I think also Halifax and Boston are kind of like, they're very similar in a way. And it's a good story for the holiday season. So,
well, the truth is that given the way that the colonies were structured, Massachusetts residents, and I have much more in common with people from New England than I do with people from Alberta. And you have much more in common with people from Nova Scotia and New Brunswick than you do from people from Texas or Washington.
California, yeah.
Because the lines always ran north-south, as particularly on the East Coast because of the shipping. So, you know, the trade was between Halifax and Portland and Boston and the New England colonies and New York. And, you know, at that time, there were no colonies out west. It was Spanish territory or unexplored territory. So, I always feel I've been out west in Canada, and I love the West. It's great. But I always feel much more at home in New Hampshire or Maine or Vermont than I do in Alberta. It's not that I don't feel at home in Alberta. It's just, to me, it's like going to Texas. It's a different world. But if I go to New England, I feel like I'm at home because the people are like me. We have a shared history, and even the architecture is similar and all that sort of stuff. So, we have a lot more in common than we don't. So, every year we send you guys down a big, giant Christmas tree. There was a big celebration here a week or two ago when they put it on the back of a truck and they drove it out, and it was a big parade, and the premier and the mayor and everybody went. And it's great because it's our way of saying thank you, because in 1917, in December, because Halifax was a big convoy.
Oh, this is the 100th anniversary.
Yes, this is the 100th anniversary. of the Halifax explosion, which was the largest man-made non-nuclear explosion before Hiroshima, or man-made explosion of any sort, I guess. And so what happened is Donald Trump mastered time travel, traveled back in time to 1917, and blew up Halifax, and then somehow made his way back into the present. So we don't hold that against you guys, because we know Massachusetts voted for Clinton. But you, after Halifax blew up, and I think like a couple thousand people were killed, it leveled the city. You can still walk through Halifax and see a lot of historic sites where, hey, look, a cannon landed here from one of the ships, or a piece of metal landed here, and this is like 5 miles away or something. Boston, you know, came to our aid and responded with massive aid that prevented an even worse tragedy. So as our way of saying thank you, we send you guys a giant Christmas tree every year.
Yeah, it's awesome. So
makes me want to cry.
Yeah, like I said, it's perfect for the holiday season.
Did they die sacrificial tree?
I'm pretty sure we talked about this. People are like, now they're like, what the fuck, man? But I talked about this for sure on the show with Vaney when I was telling about my trip to Canada. They had that World War One. For folks who don't know this, I went to the Citadel in Halifax, and part of, even though that's like a Revolutionary War thing, they had like a display built around World War One, the trenches and stuff, and it was amazing. It was one of those sort of happenstance experiences where you're like, wait, what is this thing? All right, I'll check it out. And then you're completely blown away. It was like an incredible recreation of the trenches from all the different countries that fought in World War One. You know, as you go along, it evolves into the different styles, and each one had sort of a little different thing. And I guess they were taking it down. Did they take it down yet?
I don't know. I haven't been up there this year, but I was in it. I got a private tour from one of the – I just happened to know a mutual friend, so I kind of got a private tour of it from the head of historical recreations or whatever at the Citadel. And, yeah, it was great. And it's a very quintessential Canadian thing. And I don't want to knock Americans. I don't know what you guys would do. But most countries would tend to say, hey, here's the trench that we were in, right? So if you're British, maybe you don't go out of your way to recreate the German trenches. I don't know. Maybe you do.
Right.
But Canadians, we recreated everyone. So, okay, here's what a British – and they all look different. They were all a little different. So here's what a British trench looked like, and they built it this way, and their officer's hut looked like this. And little. Okay, now here's what a French one looked like. And so they built it all as this – and in the moat that surrounds the castle. So it was great. The Citadel. And here's what a German one looks like. And it's like, okay, those are the big three. Oh, and you have another section? Well, what's that one for? Because you've covered everyone, right? Here's what the Belgian trench looked like. The Belgians? Yes, they held a whole sector up in the north part, the teeny part of their country that the Germans didn't conquer. And so the Belgians had trenches. Cool. And yeah, it was great. The Citadel's just a great place to go, no matter what. But the trench thing, and that had a lot to do with the 100th anniversary. It had everything to do with the 100th anniversary of the ongoing 100th anniversary of the First World War, which, as we like to say, yes, technically the United States has fought in two world wars. But we were there first on the side of freedom in both of them. So especially the Second World War, which was really about freedom. First World War was more about colonial bickering. But in both cases, we were fighting several years before the Americans became involved. And so, sure, you guys might have gotten in and won the war, I guess. At the end of the day, you tipped the balance. But somebody had to keep the score close until, you know, we could get you guys in the game. And that was the British Empire. So, yay, good for us. Huzzah, as we say.
Yeah.
I think
almost the conversation doesn't do it justice, but it was a very immersive experience.
For people who got to do it. I don't know if you were literally in the trench.
Well, they said they were taking it down. They had it for like 2 years and they were taking it down.
Oh, well, that's too bad. I would have left it up as a permanent exhibit. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Yeah, I think they should.
Other than that, nobody would ever go into the moat. You couldn't access it. It's off limits. So they built it in the moat, or the the giant ditch to keep people from, to prevent soldiers from jumping into the fort. And I'm not doing that justice. I just call it a moat. And I don't know why, if they took it down, I don't know why they would do that, because there's no other, like, you would never go into the moat otherwise. So it's not like something else would take its place. Yeah. So it's not like something else would be taking its place. So I'm sad if they took it down. That's a shame. Oh, well.
Yeah, I should look into that and find out. You should flex some political muscle up there in Halifax and get them to save it.
I don't have any political muscle. I lost, remember? And I lost because of UFOs. That's not true.
Well, so. That could be a wedge issue, though. That could be a wedge issue in the next election. You could be like, you see what happened? I didn't win, and now the exhibit's gone, and I would have fought to save it. So... We'll bring back the exhibit.
It's an interesting thing, because I never miss an opportunity to bash Stephen Bassett, and this will be the last time you do this show that I'll be on it, because you're winding the show down. So in this iteration, here's my final dig at Stephen Bassett, who, unlike Stephen Greer, I'm always for Bassett. So Bassett and I have both, I think we're the only two people that I know of within what could be called ufology who have ever run for elected office. Because Bassett ran for Congress several years ago. And so, cool. He ran for Congress. I ran for the equivalent, what you guys would call a state legislature. I got 26% of the vote, and he got less than one. So, yay, I win. Huzzah! Take that, Bassett. There you go. So, my brand of ufology is clearly more popular and politically palatable than Stephen Bassett's version. Ta-da!
Yeah, but didn't he run as the disclosure candidate? Wasn't that that was his wedge issue, where everyone else was like, dude, I just want, you're running for school committee, Steve. Like, we don't care about UFO disclosure. Come on, man.
I ran on healthcare and electoral reform, and he ran on UFO disclosure. So, yeah, there's probably a pretty good explanation in there on why one of us did better than the other. But at the end of the day, we both lost. So we have that in common. Plus, we will always have the casino. We will always have the casino where you smacked your ass cheek in my face. So we'll always have that.
Yes, the infamous ass cheek smack. Now, how far can you go past the hour? I don't want to intrude or ask too much, but we can go over the hour.
Well, we can go a little over if you want. I have an early morning meeting actually that I have to go to, so I can do a little bit extra. It's up to you.
All right, I'll save. I'll tell you what.
I'm not sure how much.
That's the only time I'll mention wrestling, and then that'll be your cue to wind down.
Because I know that's the part of the show that Aaron Gullius has been listening for almost 2 hours to hear, you and I talking about wrestling. So he's out there.
Actually,
waiting.
It's funny you mention Aaron, because when we got into that long tangent just now about Canadian history, I imagined that the only person in the audience who was like on the edge of their seat and really riveted by the conversation was Aaron Gullius. I figured my mind, I'm like, Aaron Gullius must be loving this. This is some deep cut history, some real deep cut history here.
You would think so, but here's the truth. I mean, I swore to him I'd never really. He's not actually an historian. That's all fraud. He works at a Denny's. True story.
Wow.
I mean, and as Stephen Bassett would say, prove me wrong. So. There you go.
I think that explains his. He was really bullish on libraries, so maybe that's.
Libraries is a code word for Denny's. I think he might have moved on to an IHOP now. But no, he's a real history professor. He's a good guy.
Of course he is. He's a great guy. His new podcast is amazing. I don't know how much you've heard of it, but it's really, really good.
he's a good guy. I'm not prepared to go great yet, but he's very good. He's a very good guy. I'm sure he's still listening. He's like, okay, that's it. I'm never going back to Nova Scotia. Yeah, his new pod, his new, what is it, Saucer Life or whatever? I mean, is
everybody yeah, Saucer Life.
He is the great.
It's excellent.
Yeah, he's a great unifier. I mean, he's getting rave reviews, and I've listened to a couple episodes. And the best part about it, he never has guests, and he never will, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, no, it's a completely original idea. I really love it a lot.
Yeah, it's
now
just
he's
him
like,
talking.
All right.
Flying saucer history. Yeah.
Yeah, well, what I likened to him about the show that I liked a lot was that that it's like he's still experimenting with he's just doing different things. You know what I mean? Because he's sort of just developing the show as he goes along, which is fun to see. You know, because a lot of shows are sort of like have been around forever. So it's like we have a certain way of doing things. With him, it's like the options are endless in a sense.
They are, and you know, to be fair, like he has an awful lot of time when he's working at the Denny's to think about stuff that he can do for his show. So
this is true.
Yeah, you know, you've got a busy life, but I mean, he's basically just slinging hash all day. So you know, he has a lot of time to think about that stuff.
Yeah, to dream about UFOs.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of like the Grant. He's the Grant Cameron of Denny's. You know, he's got a lot of spare time in his hands.
Talking about TV show ideas, they should do a spinoff show. This will, you'll never get elected to office if you do this. So this is my warning to you. But you should volunteer your legal expertise to the guy who's suing the Canadian government about Sasquatch. Have you heard about this guy?
No, I haven't. This sounds fascinating.
There's a guy in British Columbia who's suing the, the territory, I guess. But I'm not positive about it. It could be an agency within the territory for dereliction of duty to protect Sasquatch. And he claims he's going to, you know, he's going to prove in court that Sasquatch is real. So I don't know if that even, like, is he possibly, could that even actually happen? That he would be able to get in front, or they just, like, be completely throw this thing out before it ever gets in front of a judge?
I have a sneaking suspicion that it would be dismissed. But, it, you know, British Columbia is sort of the left coast. There's, if anything weird is going to happen in Canada, it would be in BC. They have a very weird political history, and it's sort of
interesting.
You know, our California, so all bets are off. So you never know. He might get lucky enough to find a judge that would let it. I don't know. I hadn't heard of it. Maybe there's some environmental statute or animal protection statute out there that he could hang his hat on. Sounds crazy to me. But stranger things have happened in British Columbia. So, you know, anything's possible. Yeah. I was a
hashtag right.
bear in British Columbia.
Yeah, well, I'll send you the link to it, but part of this part probably will get thrown out, but part of the lawsuit is like he wants the British government, or the British Columbian government, to like dispatch an expert to do like a three month Bigfoot hunt, like in the where this guy says Bigfoot is, which is like, again, it's like, imagine if that really happens, like if the judge was like, it seems fair. I mean, you can't just say it's not there. We have to send someone to look, you know. And who knows? Maybe the guy will have some weird experience on it and be like, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, because you read these stories where it's like New Zealand has just given dolphins personhood, but it means like it's not that, you know, they don't get to vote or anything, but it's they're getting all these rights and stuff. So it's like, who knows? Could happen with Bigfoot in British Columbia.
I'm sensing that a whole new television series could come out of this where – the expert that they bring in, and I'll set this up for you. So you go out into the middle of the woods in British Columbia, which if you ever saw the X-Files in the early years and any of the episodes in the woods, well, that was British Columbia, so that's what it looks like.
Yeah, I feel
so
like
you go out there,
anywhere, it's probably there.
Yeah, well, there's an awful lot of woods that, you know, people haven't been in. So you go out in the middle of the woods, and you need to get your expert there, but you can't pay him a lot. So you have to make it worth his while. So you make a television show. There'll be a lot of notoriety. Cool. And you need to give them a place to stay. So you put a couch out in the middle of the woods, and you have a floating poker game. Stephen Bassett, come on down. It's perfect for Bassett. He can turn himself into a Bigfoot expert and move to British Columbia and sleep on a couch for 3 months while checking in on Bigfoot. I like it. I'd film that. I would. And by the way, in case you think I'm kidding, I would film that because that would be hilarious.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe Steve would be up to be sent into the woods by the British Columbian government. But
yeah.
Yeah, this loathing's not going anywhere.
I can't see it happening, but I wish it would, because I'm pretty sure at least Aaron Gullius and I could agree that that would be awesome and we would watch it. I think you'd get a pretty good audience for that. Whatever else I'll say about Bassett, he's, you know, he's kind of crazily charismatic in his own way. He probably talked Bigfoot to death, but, you know, there could be something there. That's what I think. As ufology falls apart, I think you're onto something, Tim. I think we can run with this. As ufology falls apart, I think we're going to have to find jobs and places for some of its leading figures. And I don't want to take them away from the paranormal because it's all they know. So, like, we can get Bassett in on the Bigfoot thing, and Greer. I mean, let's get Greer on in some ghost hunting. Let's get Steve, because he summons aliens, so maybe he can summon ghosts. And eventually we can find a home for everybody in the disclosure movement. I don't know what we do with Richard Dolan, but yeah, we'll figure something out. And they'll all be more successful because all of these things we can do TV shows about. Nobody wants to do a TV show about UFOs. But big.
Yeah, that's true.
That works. Yeah. I like it. Done. Another Kimball Benal,
right.
Kim Benal production.
I don't even know where to begin. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was hoping you'd offer your legal expertise to this guy as his Bigfoot lawyer, but the direction you went in, it sounds even more interesting.
I don't have any legal expertise. I haven't, when I was running in the election this past year, another member of my own party, I'm not going to say who, and he meant well, but I sat down with him and another guy and they said, listen, when you're putting your literature together, you need to say that you're a lawyer. And I said, but I'm not. I have a law degree and I was once a lawyer. I was called to the bar. I passed the bar exam, but I'm a non-practicing lawyer, and now I'm not even
a
non-practicing lawyer. Like, I can't call myself a lawyer, and they were adamant that I needed to call myself a lawyer, and I said, well, no, that would be dishonest. And one of them looked at me and said, well, it's politics. Jesus, just put lawyer on your pamphlet. And I never did. I just wouldn't, because it would be dishonest. So, yeah, I don't have any...
Did you say law degree, though?
Oh, yeah, no, I still have a law degree, yeah.
Did you mention the law that you have a law degree on the pamphlet?
My biography said that I went to law school, yeah. But as I also tried explaining to people, you know, guys, lawyers aren't necessarily the most popular people. I think I'll have better luck if I put ghost hunter on my literature. Like 40 in ghost hunting.
Yeah, nobody likes lawyers, dude.
Love. Yeah, nobody wants accountants and lawyers. They want outlaws for love and ghost hunters and blue sky thinkers. That's what the future is going to be made of. And real estate developers from New York. Those are really the main categories of our new leadership. So
reality stars.
Reality stars and Stephen Bassett. There's an entire category just for Steve.
It's an obsession.
I'd love
with Steve Bassett tonight.
I know. I love and hate Bassett in the same breath. I'd like to see Bassett in Congress, though. Come on, that'd be fun.
Run. He should run for Congress. He might actually have a chance just because there seems to be a wave going on. You know?
He should just marshal the right wing UFO people, and he could waltz in. I don't want to see him in the Senate because senators are much more powerful. There's 100. He could do real damage there. But, you know, in Congress where there's over 400 of them in the House of Representatives, go for it.
Oh, there's all kinds of kooky ones, yeah.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's like, you guys thought Dennis Kucinich was nuts? Hey, take a look at what we have for you today.
Oh, you must not have heard about the lady in Florida, which is which is probably how a lot of terrible stories start.
But, I have heard of her. Yes. There,
oh, okay. The one that's running for office, and she's like, she's an alien abductee or an experiencer.
It's yeah, pretty, and maybe
it's pretty. But she's like pissed and doesn't want anyone to know now.
Okay, that's weird. Yeah, I don't know how you.
It like came out later. And she's.
I did hear something about that. I mean, that probably scuppers any chance she has of getting elected. Although it is Florida, so you never know.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just funny because they like dug it up. She did like a couple. She did like shows like Banal of America. She did a couple of like alien abductee podcasts. Like we talk about how lack of diversity or something in these shows. You know, there's whole shows that just about alien abductions. And she did like two of them, and they were posted on YouTube with her, just her name. And then they came out like later, like this, like last month, where it's like she had all these crazy stories too. It was wild. Yeah. And then they asked her, and she's like. Like a lot of scientists, I believe that there's life out there on other planets, and that's all I have to say.
Wait, is she an actual scientist?
No. Like, oh, no. She said, like, and then she listed people like, you know, Ronald Reagan and people who've seen UFOs. That's what it was. I apologize. Like Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, I also have seen a UFO, and that's really all that we need to talk about or something like that.
Right, and you know, Jimmy
was like,
Carter
"Yeah, lady, but
either.
You said you were fucking abducted." What's that?
That's a little different than sort of seeing Venus in the night sky. You said they came into your room and took you up to your spaceship or whatever. That's a sort
of.
Oh
yeah, she had like all
leap.
Kinds of conversations with them and shit.
Yeah, and maybe she did. I don't know, and I don't think that should be. It's as Donald Trump would say about the Alabama Senate election. It's up to the voters of Florida to determine whether they should. Vote for her or not. So, yeah, good for her.
Yeah, here's what she said. I join the majority of Americans who believe that there must be intelligent life in the billions of planets and galaxies in the universe.
Wow.
So
somebody in the PR department crafted that one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I just thought that was like, I guess she's still running. I haven't followed up on the story, but yeah. Yeah, exactly. She very well may have been abducted. It's just funny. It's just a funny story. It's just a funny story. Like it
sounds
pops
like the
up
kind of
like
thing,
from her past.
Sounds like the kind of thing Spicy would say. Maybe she's hired him to be her public relations person.
That is a very, yeah. That does sound very, like, Trumpian. It's like,
yeah,
talk. It's like just a word salad of like, of bloviating.
Somebody, it's so, like, he's become such a thing. Obviously, he's the president. But there was a local political leader here today, and the entire executive of his own party, not my party, but one of the other two parties, resigned. And one of them said, what was the exact thing that they referred to? Former vice president accuses Halifax Shabukto MLA and NDP leader of inhabiting a, quote, Trump-like world of alternate facts. So even up in Canada, when we want to say somebody's nuts, we just go, a Trump-like world of alternate facts, where he literally just makes shit up. And so, yeah, it's extending outward from the United States. It's like a zombie virus.
Right. Exactly. Well, it's very, as cliche as it sounds now, it's like, that movie Idiocracy was like a really dark, accurate glimpse of like how the future seems to unfold, or has been unfolding, so,
I hope it doesn't
get that far, but it's ridiculous.
I just love the idea, because I never disliked him personally, I just didn't. His policies, but he always seemed like a nice guy that you could have a beer with, I guess, George Bush. And people, I remember, viewed him as the Antichrist and called him a fascist and everything. And I have to think, somewhere Bush is sitting down going, how do you like me now? Like, you know, seriously. Hey, guess what? When you said I was the worst that you could ever think of, you were wrong. There's a lot worse. And the truth about Trump is, when people look at him now and say, this guy is the worst we can ever think of. No, got news for you, folks. there are worse options even than Trump. And if you're not careful, you might have one of them down the road. So never assume that you're at the absolute bottom of the pile until you're there, and then you'll know it. It will look a lot like Nazi Germany or Stalinist Russia. But, you know, we're not there yet. So it's still in the manageable phase until we start World War III with North Korea.
Yeah, so we got like 6 months.
By the way, you guys are on your own on that one. We want nothing to do with Kim Jong-un. We kind of like him. He's kind of plucky, you know? He speaks truth to power. I like him.
Yeah, it's fucked up, but like in a battle for hearts and minds, like Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump is about as appetizing as Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton. This is ridiculous.
In the battle of hearts and minds, when you're losing to the last Stalinist dictator on the planet Earth, and you're losing that battle, it's not a good sign. But when I listen to Trump and then Kim Jong-un both talk, I go, you're both crazy and you're both childish and you're both idiots. But you know what? I actually think Kim Jong-un is more rational. He actually has a plan, and we can kind of predict his behavior, and he will never want to go to war because that's where he's from. It's the other guy that worries me because he's like, I can't predict his behavior. And so, right, Kim Jong-un, you're the rational one. Who knew that was going to happen? Again, I blame the Large Hadron Collider. I'm surprised there aren't like Cthulian, Lovecraftian beasts running around the planet by now. Because that seems to be the world that we're living in. So,
because of the LHC. Well,
not to get too
like political and deep, because I was about to pivot to pro wrestling, but I don't think I've gotten into this on the show. But I think one thing I always sort of complain about in my own home is like, watching the news. I mean, it's like, and I'm going to sound like a total fucking old man now. Oh, and thanks to the folks who tuned in live, we're already like past the hour. I don't know how much it's really influenced culture, but I feel like it has. But it's like this just sort of like troll mentality. And I say, it's not like an old man because I blame the young people. But it's just like this whole like vote for the worst, disrupt the system, but in sort of like not in a altruistic way, but just to blow up the system. You know, and it seems like it's I don't know. That's a lot of what we have to blame for this, or it's a symptom. It's one of the many things, you know. But it's like this attitude of like, it'll be funny. We'll just vote for this guy. He makes me laugh. It's all a joke. It's like, dude, it's not all a joke, you know.
You know what? It's funny because I remember watching the election returns, and there's no question I would have voted for Clinton. And I would have voted for Clinton over Sanders, too. So I kind of like Clinton. But whatever. But I do remember thinking that night, my wife came in, and or at the time, my fiance, and she said, the early returns, Trump has a shot. And I went, no, he doesn't. This, wait till Pennsylvania and Ohio come in, and Wisconsin. Like, this is... I remember when people thought Romney had a shot. It's over. It's not going to happen. And then I kept watching the results and I went, holy shit. I still don't think he's going to win, but he really does have a shot now. And then I started contemplating what the world would be like with a President Trump. And I have to admit, I thought, this could be kind of fun. Like, what's the worst that he could do? I mean, surely he'll become a little more moderate, but he's a chaos agent, and this could be interesting, but it's not going to happen. And then, by about 3 o'clock in the morning, I went, oh my God. Oh Jesus. Like this, it has happened. There's not even going to be a recount. This one's over. Like, put it to bed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed that this is going to be more fun than not. And yet, it turns out it has been. My wife, like, I should be watching the news all the time because I'm a political science. That's why I studied college law. I'm literally CNN should be targeting stuff to me. Nope. I hardly ever watch the news. I check the CNN website once or twice a day just to see what the headlines are. I read the New York Times. I subscribe to it online. And that's it. And then I go about my business. But my wife, every time I go upstairs, when she's home, it's MSNBC or CNN. Like, nonstop.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's the greatest show on earth. It's
become
the greatest
a reality
show on earth.
Yeah. And, you know, I tell her occasionally, hey, you want to see something really funny? Tune in to Fox, because we get Fox News. And she won't. And I don't blame her. But I say, look, try Hannity, see what happens. But, yeah, I mean, she's not on it all the time, but a lot of it, like, at times she's watching the news. And I just went,
yeah, no, this is like OJ trial shit. This is like, yeah, this is like, this is a national story, you know, but it's like instead of like some event, it's like the world is just that now.
Like, I know.
Because of this, because he's the president though, because, you know what I mean? It's like,
but they don't have to cover they don't have to cover every stinking thing. So a lot of this is on the media. They created Trump. And now they have to live with him, and they continue to push him along.
And you know what I think
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, you know what I think is at play here, too, is the old Howard Stern thing where it's like half the audience watches because they love you and half listens because they love you and half because they hate you and can't wait to hear what you're going to say next. It's like the exact, you know, it's the exact thing with Trump. That's why, I mean, the people that hate him are just as fucking riveted by this, or probably more than the people who fucking love him. It's crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you. Actually,
very
probably
weird.
More. They want to see him taken down. I actually saw somebody tweet on November 22nd, and I can't stand Trump, but even I wouldn't go this far. But they paraphrased the line from the old Simon and Garfunkel song, Mrs. Robinson. You know, where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Nation turns its lonely eyes to you. And they tweeted, where have you gone, Lee Harvey Oswald? And nation turns its lonely eyes to you, which I actually kind of find funny, except for the fact that you're advocating assassinating the president of the United States, which is terrible. Unless, of course, you play the historical game of what if you could travel back in time and kill Hitler before he came to power. Anyway, people have actually started tweeting stuff like this. And so you're in this really – I feel sorry for you guys. We have our problems up here, but whew, you guys, it's so polarized. And I see people on Facebook and stuff and longtime friends falling out over – you know, the sort of bitterness and everything. And it's a shame. It makes whatever bitterness exists within ufology. Look at me pivot back there. Seem penny ante in comparison. Yeah. So pro wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, to jump off the line, the pivot point earlier that I had, it's like this is – the world has become like pro wrestling. So it's you know, it's pretty crazy. There was a New York Times article. I got to find that article. I'll send it to you. It's like someone actually wrote that the world has turned and sort of, you know, laid it out there, that idea. And it's true. You know, everything's this bombastic theatrics of just, you know, even just the news, like graphics and all that. It's like, you know, everything's a showdown. Everything's a battle. Everyone's a character.
Well,
it's really great.
Yeah, and in a serious way, I would say, and I've always about Americans in general, not specific ones. And you know what? It's less prevalent in Canada. We're a little more knowledgeable about the world, but we have this problem too. Okay, what's going on in Myanmar? How many Americans are aware of the unfolding genocide there? I don't know, maybe some, but it's generally being underreported. How much reported is happening about the coup and the installation of a new president in Zimbabwe? Well, it was mentioned, but that's a big story. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and some of it's like, good, where are the positive news stories? I wish the news was, you know, more positive stories too. It shouldn't all be Trump. So the other day he did the Pocahontas thing, right? So he had the code talker, the Navajo code guys in honoring them. And this should be a slam dunk for a president. Literally keep your mouth shut and say, you guys are awesome. Nation thanks you. And then that's it. Don't say anything else.
Right.
It's easy. That one shouldn't be hard.
Can't help
somehow
Can't
he
help
screwed it up. Fine. Okay, he screwed it up, Trump. You know what the media should do? Like, just don't report it. Who cares? Report the part.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I agree with that.
Report the part where he didn't screw it up. So show him saying, you guys are national heroes and the nation thanks you. And then that's it. And then don't show the part about him doing the Pocahontas thing, because who cares? And yet that's the part that they
focus
on.
He's just doing it for attention anyway.
Yes.
He's like a toddler. He's just doing it for attention. So if you're just like, yeah, just ignore it because he's fucking a baby, you know,
right. My son-in-law is about to be indicted by the special counsel. Hey, let's call Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas and take everyone's attention away from the fact that the Russians, you know, helped me steal our election or whatever. That's what he lives on. That's what any sort of dictator or authoritarian lives on, the distraction. He's very good at it. He's an idiot, but he has a couple of things he's very good at doing, and one of them is manipulating people. He's awesome at it, and we keep falling for it. And look, here you and I are talking about Donald Trump on my last appearance on Banal of America. So that one's on me. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm glad we didn't get into this other topic, but it's like if when they unearth the final season in like 20 years, they're going to be like, okay, I know who Donald Trump is, but who the fuck is Tom DeLonge? It's like, Jesus, I've talked about both those people too much this year, and I don't want to talk about him. So we're going to pivot because I know you can't hang out too long, so we'll jump to Gullius's greatest hits. I guess the question, perfect segue. What's that?
I had 50 minutes ready on Tom DeLonge. Oh, well. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh,
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. If this is a perfect question for a paranormal show, if Donald Trump is impeached or forced to step down because he worked with Russia, should he be removed from the WWE Hall of Fame?
I like it. That is an awesome pivot. I will say only one thing about Tom DeLonge. Blink 182 was a terrible band, the ultimate corporate fake punk rock band. So. You shouldn't believe him for that reason, folks. He's a terrible musician. Should Donald Trump be removed from the WWE Hall of Fame if he's impeached or when he's impeached?
Right.
I think not. I think he should remain in the WWE Hall of Fame. Yeah. I think the only person who shouldn't be in the WWE Hall of Fame is Chris Benoit. Like, and maybe Jimmy Snuka. Wait, he's already there.
I was going to say, what about Jimmy? He's already in, yeah.
But he's already in. If you want to remove somebody,
start
with Jimmy Snuka. But Benoit's the untouchable, the unmentionable one. But Trump, yeah, sure, leave him in. Why not? It's probably where he belongs, you know, in the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame or the WWE. And the great thing about the WWE Hall of Fame as a metaphor for Trump is there is no WWE Hall of Fame. There's no physical building. There's no... You know, it's just kind of they hold a big ceremony every year and they give you a ring, I guess. But there's no actual Hall of Fame. They should build one. It would be awesome. But there is none. I don't know why they haven't, actually. That's the perfect Hall of Fame for Donald Trump to be in. A Hall of Fame that doesn't actually exist. That's perfect. So
yeah,
I'd leave
he
him,
was
right?
pro-wrestling enough to get elected president. That's pretty, you know, that's Hall of Fame worthy.
And he used pro wrestling tactics to do it, and he put Linda McMahon in his cabinet. So
exactly, yeah. So he's definitely in the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. There's no, for better or for worse, regardless of how you feel about his policies. When it comes to pro wrestling, Donald Trump, he's Hall of Fame worthy.
My only complaint about Donald Trump when it comes to pro wrestling is that he didn't put Vince McMahon in his cabinet. I don't even care where. Because if he put Vince McMahon in the cabinet, that would remove Vince McMahon from his role as the guy running and ruining WWE programming and, you know, let Paul Levesque take over and turn modern WWE into something roughly akin to NXT, which would be awesome.
Yeah. I have a very NXT nerd. Fan. That's good, because I have a very nerd question for you, wrestling question-wise, that I'm afraid will keep you up at night, maybe weeping. Have you been you saw the last two shows, right, relatively speaking, so the two post-Survivor Series shows?
I've been busy working, so I read the write-ups, but I didn't I
Okay,
didn't
that's
really
all you need to
the
know.
Shows.
All right. That's fine. I don't even watch SmackDown.
Right.
But people don't understand who... The non-wrestling fans who somehow, for some reason, are still listening, what they don't understand is they they make so much stuff. They make so many shows that you pretty much, I don't know, it sounds the same way with Paul as it is with me. You turn almost into, like, you watch less of the shows and just read more of the recaps so you can get an idea of what the story is. So that the question or point or whatever that may haunt you is you saw how they brought Paige back with two underlings to form a faction, right? Have you heard that? And then the next night they created – what's that? The Absolution, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the next night they created another three-woman faction on SmackDown.
Yes.
Okay. Isn't it heartbreaking in a sense that they should have, could have just if they wanted to move Emma over to SmackDown, shouldn't they have brought up the iconic duo to be her faction? Wouldn't that have made more sense?
You've mentioned Emma, and that makes me sad because I love Emma, so, or Tennille as she's now going by.
Right. Well, that's why I thought of you when this happened, because those two, the iconic duo, are also Australian. They all came up together. It's like if you're looking for a three-woman faction, you have one right there in your company. Why don't you – and then they release her, and it's like they have no foresight on this shit.
No, and who knows what you can believe, but I hear she was difficult to work with backstage, largely because she wanted a real character with real storylines. So, I guess that makes her difficult to work with. My hope with Paige, speaking of difficult to work with, is that both of these factions, so the SmackDown women, the three that nobody knows, are part of Paige's faction, that she's invading both shows and using NXT talent. And I don't think they've made that clear yet, but if what they're doing on SmackDown is just recreating what they're doing on Raw, then I hate it. But if what they're doing on SmackDown is they're working for Paige and she's trying to take over both shows, I love it. That's awesome. And that's the kind of sort of non-linear high-end thinking that I really don't imagine the WWE is capable of these days, but I remain hopeful that perhaps they are.
Yeah, because sometimes in my cynical opinion, it's like almost there's a good chance that could happen, but it won't be what they planned originally. You know what I mean? It'll be like they were too lazy to come up with an idea to debut the second faction, so they just copied the first faction's thing the next night, and then maybe later someone will be like, "Hey, I read online, some people think these are connected," and I'll be like, "That's genius. Let's do that."
Yeah, sadly enough, you're probably right. So here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Jinder Mahal, should he get another run with the title, or is that an experiment that completely flopped and he should be sent back to the lower mid-card regions?
He should just be sent back to the upper mid-card region, I think. I would make the SmackDown title like a more of a I would just put the belt on AJ. Keep the belt on AJ Styles. He's the best wrestler in the company, so he just puts on the best matches. I feel like Jinder Mahal, he was on terrible matches, and his character is like, it's JBL. It's JBL all over again. It's a completely, like, cartoon, 80s-style cartoon bad guy. And it's like, why? It's just not entertaining at all.
Yeah, so
to me, I feel like if you're looking at it from sort of an even bigger picture point of view, it's like now that he's had his run with the belt, you can include him in the upper echelon. But it's like I wouldn't, you know, he's a Sheamus level now. You've developed a new Sheamus.
Yeah, that's not so bad. I'm a huge huge Jinder fan. I believe you shouldn't hinder the Jinder, as they say. I'd like to see him get another run with the title, and I'd like to see them do it the right way this time because I thought they completely got that backwards. So they turn him into this heel because that's all Vince can think of, and they go with the whole ethnic thing and the racial thing and everything. And what they wrote for him, like I don't like the stuff he did with Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, the guy's Canadian.
Yeah.
I'm sure he just went, "Oh my God, do I really have to say this? All right, fine. I guess I'm making money." He's a natural face. if you ever listen to him in interviews, he comes across as charming, knowledgeable, and he's got a great success story. He was literally, you know, out of it. He was a member of three-man band and everything. Why you would not build this up as a great success story of a guy who worked hard and came back and achieved his dream and reached the top of the mountain? That's the story you should tell. And instead, you turned him into a generic sort of racist heel. It's crazy. I don't get it.
Yeah.
But.
Well, I'll give them credit in this sense. I feel like I can almost guarantee they'll eventually mine that for a story. They'll turn him good. He's now slotted like at the Sheamus level. So Sheamus flips back and forth, so we can fight all the different guys. You know. But he has that credibility that he's, that he's a former champion. He's been in a lot of big bouts.
I would hope so, but I actually kind of see him as being sort of a Jack Swagger-like figure, technically a former champion, but
I see.
I don't see a bright future.
Like a Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, well, not even at a Dolph Ziggler level.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he's probably so ruined by the gimmick that they saddled him with that, he could be heading for a precipitous fall, not quite of Ellsworth levels, but I think he could be like, you know, the Ascension or something. He might, in a year, you might think, did that ever happen? Was he really champion? I don't believe it.
Well, they have to stay committed to it then. I mean, that's on them. You know what I mean? It's like,
they need to
get him in, segue him into a high level feud if he's not going to have the belt. I don't know who he'd be. Well, they seem to indicate John Cena. I guess he wants a match with John Cena. So, and since WWE seems to resent John Cena, I get the impression they do. That I have a feeling they'll have him beat Cena or maybe just have the annual sacrificial match to Cena at WrestleMania this year.
Maybe. So here's another question for you. Who faces Brock Lesnar for the title at WrestleMania?
It's Roman Reigns.
Yeah, no.
I was pretty sure that's what I've heard all year. It's just been a terrible year. The story, this Roman Reigns thing is like, it'd be one thing if they just seem to always be trying to coronate him. It's like, this is going to be like the fourth or fifth year in a row they've just kept trying. And it's like, at some point, it's like he's established, but he's just not the guy. He's just, people just don't want to really, that's why I love Braun Strowman. I think Braun Strowman's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So do I. The thing about Reigns is, if you keep him, like you already hear people talking about breaking up the Shield again, unless you want to turn Reigns heel and have him be the guy who breaks it up, then you need to keep the Shield together. If you're going to pin the title on him at WrestleMania, he has to be a member of the Shield. It's the only way he doesn't get booed out of the building. But I think if he's a member of the Shield, you hear him he's being cheered again. So within the context of being part of that group, I think people actually like him. It's when he goes away and they try and force him down people's throats. And I like Reigns. I think he's charismatic. He do his thing on the mic. He's good at things. And I actually think he's fun to watch in the ring. Sure, he's not AJ Styles, but then again, who is? He's better than a lot of guys, and he works hard. I saw him when they were here in Halifax this summer, and he worked hard, and he took all the bumps, and he was good with the crowd.
He's become a halfway decent wrestler. I mean, he's
John Cena, and I mean that
exactly
in a good way. Like, he's a guy you can build a company around. But, would I rather watch a Seth Rollins match or a Roman Reigns match? Well, that's easy, Seth Rollins. So, I'd say the same about AJ Styles or Finn Balor. I'd rather watch a Finn Balor match. The problem is, Finn Balor is not a believable challenger to Brock Lesnar. So, that can't happen. You got to work your way down. You got to have the title taken off Lesnar by somebody like Reigns. And then Reigns would have to lose to somebody maybe like Rollins. And then I could believe that Finn Balor could beat Seth Rollins. But I don't believe he can beat, even Roman Reigns. So you kind of have to work the title back down to humans as opposed to monsters and beasts. So do you think Braun Strowman's going to win the title within the next 6 months?
6 months? I don't know. If they were smart, he would, but I don't think so. I think Roman Reigns will have the title, and maybe, if anything, I could almost see them already envisioning, even though they've fought a million times, like a Braun. You keep Braun a good guy now for until like next, not 2018 Royal Rumble, the 2019 Royal Rumble, and then maybe you turn him heel, or maybe that's when you turn Roman Reigns heel finally. But they have some Braun. I think Braun Roman might be the main event for some reason. I feel like he's on such an ascension that he, that they might try and, pivot them against each other.
So I'm going to run a couple names by you. I want you to tell me whether you think they will ever be either WWE or Universal Champion, either one of the titles. Will they ever hold
them? Okay.
Samoa Joe.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to predicate this answer, though. I'm going to, because I was thinking about it. One of my issues, I guess, with this endless coronation of Roman Reigns is like he's fought like everybody. You know what I mean? So it's not really interesting. Like, remember when he won the title finally? He's like fighting with Sheamus and shit. It's like he's fought everybody because of the. I noticed this when the Monday Night Wars happened. It's worse now. It's like, especially from when I was a kid, but it's like, I call it pro wrestling inflation. It's like a turn used to be like a major event every 6 months, and then it became like weekly. And now it's like these epic matches are on TV all the time. So it's, so it's like, what constitutes an epic match anymore? But I think that Roman Reigns will get the belt back from Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and then they're going to need feuds for him. And
yes.
I assume that this the Brock Lesnar idea or the experiment where it's like he's going to hold the belt. They've done it like twice now where he's going to hold the belt and never defend it except for like three times a year. Then I think this will be the last time they do that terrible idea, I hope. And so then the title's going to have to bounce around to different guys. That's how it gets, that's how John Cena became a 16-time world champion. So I assume I assume Roman will break that record because he's going to have to lose it to Samoa Joe and win it back. He's going to have to – so different guys will get a run with the belt, yeah.
The funny thing about being a 16-time world champion is that you're a 16-time world champion loser too, so or at least 15.
I have a friend who always says that.
Yeah, it's it's good news, bad news. Wouldn't it be better to just be a one-time world champion and hold the belt for 8 years, John? That would be more impressive. Okay, so you think Samoa Joe will have a run with the title? What about Finn Balor? Will he get another run?
I don't think. Oh, I forgot he had a one with the Universal title for a day.
Yes.
For some reason I feel like they've soured on him, and I don't think they're going to give him a. He may get like sort of a Jack Swaggery honorary run, but I don't think he's gonna I don't think he's gonna get a serious win, serious run with
title
or anything.
Shinsuke Nakamura.
I think he will, but almost like the opposite. I guess kind of in a sense, but like I think he'll get sort of one as a shot, like a Benoit Reign,
right?
Where it's like you got the title because you're revered. So here's a 3-month reign.
You know,
I figured that's what they were going to do at SummerSlam and have him lose eventually. Lose it to AJ Styles. I'm holding out hope for an AJ Styles Nakamura match at WrestleMania. That'll be amazing.
That would be a lot of fun. So two more. Bobby Roode.
I could see him winning it on the SmackDown side, for sure. I could see him winning it on the SmackDown side. It's as a longtime fan, I just have to take issue, though, with the disparity in the titles, at least. If they were going to do it this way, I feel like they should have made the Brock Lesnar title the lineage championship. To me, it's like they invented a completely random title that has, like, that's the focus of the whole promotion.
Well, I think you know what my belief is. There should be one woman's title, one tag team title, one WWE title, and then the U.S. and the Intercontinental titles can be show-specific. And the champions who hold the three main ones, tag team, women's, and WWE, are free agents. They can appear on either show, and people can work their way up on either show and challenge them. But to get there, you have to work your way up. I just think it's splitting the titles up like that is terrible. So here's one more. This is a guy I want to get another run with one of the two big titles. And because I was always a fan, but he has been the MVP of the WWE for the last year. And he's off television now for a while. The Miz. Is The Miz going to get, are they going to reward his fine work by giving him a title run when he comes back from making the Marine 27?
They should. He deserves it. He's really improved quite a lot. I used to be a Miz. I wouldn't say hater, but I was indifferent. I was just like, it's The Miz, you know. But he's really improved quite a bit in the last, two or three years especially. To the point where, he should get another run with the title. And if they do it, I could see him winning on either brand, to be honest with you, because he seems like he's almost at that level now, honestly. So I'm pretty impressed. I mean, look at the his send-off was big, getting beat by Roman Reigns. So, you know.
Yeah, in a competitive match. He's actually much better.
I can see
in
him
the
being
ring.
The good comparison would be like to the Jericho role, not necessarily now, but towards the end of his long run in WWE. You know what I mean? Where it was like you could always count on him to main event, and he, as a heel, there's a good chance he's going to steal the belt, because the work he's done with the Intercontinental title and sort of building it up, they should put into one of the world titles.
Yep. Well, the weird thing is, if you had asked anybody, 4 years ago, is Miz a Hall of Famer? You would have gotten probably mostly no's. And I mean, some people might have said, well, okay, maybe, but probably not. To me, if you look at him now and you say, is this guy going into the Hall of Fame? If you take the Hall of Fame seriously, because Coco Beware is in it. So, absolutely.
Right.
He's a multiple Intercontinental champion. He's held the world championship, a tag team champion, and he's more or less been the face of Raw for the last year in terms of carrying the sort of the talkie segments. I think he's turned himself into an A-lister, really. And if you'd asked me that a few years ago,
I agree.
The Miz? But I've become a huge fan. He is the one thing that if I know he's on Raw, I will watch. I PVR Raw, and then I'll read the reviews, and I'll go, okay, this match looks like it's worth watching, maybe. But if The Miz has a segment, and he pretty much always does lately, I'll go, I'm going to fast forward. I want to watch that. Because in the ring talking, he's awesome. It's hilarious. It's so good. So good. He's reached Jericho levels of, in ring talkability. He's the only other, Jericho's
absolutely,
the only guy I can compare him to. Yeah. Cool.
Questions. Exactly. And he's a fine wrestler, I wouldn't say he's great or anything, but he's perfectly fine. He's better than Jinder Mahal. By a mile.
Yes, he is. Or a kilometer, we would say.
There you go. He knows his character well and shit. So what's going on now? Let's do the plugs and we'll call it a night. So where can people find where we start? Is there a Twitter for this thing, a website for the Haunted Show?
You can go to www.winterlightproductions, that's all one word, .com. That's the corporate website. And Haunted's got a page there. It does have a Twitter account, which I think is at Haunted TV Series. So you can follow us there, which would be great. And I know what your next question will be is, when can Americans see it or whatever, people in outside your little part of the world, Paul? And I suspect the answer to that question is going to be March or April of 2018. By then, it should be airing on it should be available on places like iTunes and stuff. We do have a strategy. We do have a plan. But, it's a slow roll.
Yeah, well, we got to get you down here into Biloxi for the.
I would love to go to a ghost. Like, I have no interest in ever going to a ghost
conference. I would too. It sounds like I'm making fun of the idea and shit, but it's coming from a place of like, I want to go to the Biloxi Scarefest now.
UFO conferences, no interest, but the ghost conference thing, I'd love to go and see what they're like. Absolutely.
Very upbeat, I think, for based on my limited experience in non-UFO events.
Well,
about your wrestling? For the people that enjoyed the last like 10 minutes, 20 minutes of this, what you said you were launching a wrestling podcast? Has that been tabled because you're too busy?
Yes and no. We did do one episode. My friend Dylan Garland and I started a podcast called 60-Minute Time Limit, and which we thought was really clever. And we did one episode, and we enjoyed it. And then, boom, man, we got really busy. So as soon as Haunted winds down, it's not going to be a regular podcast. It's going to be like whenever we have the time and whenever we think about something like, oh, man, it's the Royal Rumble. We need to do an episode about the Royal Rumble. Let's do that. But the idea that we would do one every week on a regular basis, I can't see that happening because we'd go insane. Like,
I was just going to say that's insane. Yeah.
So, I wanted to do an episode.
Much like Paranormal Podcast, there's a billion wrestling podcasts, so what's the point?
Yeah. Well, the point would be to talk with my good friend Dylan about something we love. So, but would I want to talk every week about, hey, what's happening with Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler? No. When we did do the one episode we've done so far, it was just after Emma got released. And, I wanted to talk about that. And there were a couple other things that we wanted to talk about. But so I had something I wanted to talk about. And so I ragged on the WWE for probably 20 or 30 minutes. And, that doesn't happen every week. So
there you go. All right. Well, keep us posted on that. And do you have a personal place people should follow you or your own website or anything? Or is that the one you said?
PaulAndrewKimball.com, but that's primarily for political stuff. I talk politics and things, so folks might not find that.
You don't have like an old Other Side of Truth? I mean, you know what I'm saying? The old, mothballed?
The blog is still there. What is that? RedStarFilms.blogspot.com. I don't post on it anymore, really, but it's got years worth of writing. And, come just find me on Twitter, sorry. You can follow me on Twitter at PaulKimballFilm. Or come find me on Facebook, I was going to say, and send me a friend invite or something. Yeah, I'm on all the social media things, so they can find me.
He's on social media. Actually, you should have mentioned, and now I will mention, that you're insanely prolific on Facebook. It's hard to keep up. It's hard to keep up with you. Your wall is like it really is a stream of thought. I don't know. It's awesome.
Well, we've been talking. I posted the Wikipedia link to the Battle of Long Sioux on your Facebook page. So, I can multitask that way.
It's awesome. All right, man. Well, we're getting up against the wall soon, and I know you got to get to bed and get ready because it's an hour ahead where you are. It might be an hour ahead soon where I am because they're talking about changing and joining up. Talk about the other colonies. They're talking about New England joining up with your time zone.
So, join us.
Yeah.
There you go. The Porg says hello.
The start of the great Canadian Reformation. We're going to New England's coming back. We want part of that original colony.
We take it all back. Or as the Queen likes to say, now that you have President Trump, she goes, "How do you like us now? Are you rethinking this?" We'll welcome you back. We would welcome you back into the empire with open arms.
You
cantankerous
all right.
rebels. Yeah. Except for that Sam Adams guy. I don't like his beer, so he can't come, but the rest of you can.
All right, man. Thank you very much for doing the show. I really appreciate it. All these years and all the adventures, and I appreciate the gravitas with which you've treated tonight's conversation. It was humbling. So thank you, man.
I have no idea what that means, but I don't know if there was any, if I was gravitas or not. I just appreciate it. You're the one podcast guy who, no matter what I've said over the years, has not come to hate me. So you know, you've always welcomed me back, and I think you've had the best run on podcasting. You know, I've been on other shows. I've even, as we know, hosted briefly another show. But Banal of America, I said it 10 or 11 years ago, and I'll say it again as you head out the door off into the sunset, is the best of the best. You are the Ric Flair of podcasting.
Wow. I'm using all of these quotes later someday.
Yeah, go for it.
So I appreciate
except no
this.
John, except no John Cena-esque substitutes. Stick with the original. He is the Ric Flair of podcasting, or, you know, the Kevin Nash, one or the other. A little bit of
yeah,
both.
Yeah, either or.
Yeah.
All right.
They're both
well, fun. Hopefully my Canadian plans for next year are up in the air, because the Canadians are coming to America. So my family's coming here. So, yeah.
Ooh, very
it's like, you know, it's like every sequel has to change location. So, yeah. But I had so much fun in Halifax and everything, considering returning anyway and doing kind of what we did last time, exploring some of the nooks and crannies of the Maritimes. So I will let you know.
You are always welcome. And I am considering resurrecting the New Frontiers Symposium sometime over the next year. So if I do that, we'll have to put you on the speaker list. I'm pretty sure
you'd
love
that, man. That'd be great.
Yeah. Put you in front of the podium, or sorry, behind the podium for a change, and let you take the slings and arrows from the Q&A afterwards. Oh, those audiences.
Oh, they'll love me.
Yeah, no, they would. So yeah, that's something, you know, I'd love to have Aaron and you and Greg and Nick, you know, kind of like a cabal reunion or something up here. And then I'd film it and sell it. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
There you go. See? Learn your lesson, yeah. Professional ghost hunters.
Yes. Film everything and then sell it. That's
exactly.
How it works, boys. Anyway, thanks very much, Tim.
All right, man. Have a great night.
Thanks, you too. Thanks, everyone, for listening. It's been a pleasure.
Yes. Thank you to all the folks in the in the chat room tonight. Thanks to all the folks listening on MP3. Hopefully people are still listening after all that wrestling talk. Or as Paul would call it, he's still on the thing here, so he's probably hearing me. Wrestling, as my uncle might call it, wrestling talk. No show next week. Oh, no, what am I talking about? No guest yet next week. I got one in mind. I got to get in touch. I got to lock it in. Fell a little behind with the holidays, man. What do you want from me? It's crazy to think about that we just did Rucksgiving. It's like we're really heading down the pike here, full throttle, towards the finish line. I mean, we had Go Rightly on recently, Bruce Rucks, and now Paul Kimball. It's like all of the stalwarts of the show have been on here in the final season. But there's still a handful more stalwarts and other people, legends, icons of the show, and I think I have a few more surprises up my sleeve. So I can't tell you much more than that. But I have to get in touch with a couple of people and try and get that together for next week. And as usual, stay tuned to the website. Stay tuned to Banal of America on Facebook, and we'll have the information on that once I get confirmation. And that's about it. Hope everybody has an awesome week, and I'll be talking to you next time.